In a world where cities lie in ruins and survival is a daily battle, Rebecca Quinn's Ensnared has emerged as the dark horse of post-apocalyptic romance fiction. This raw, intense tale of one woman's journey from isolation to belonging has developed a cult following, with readers dubbing themselves "quinky devotees" across social media platforms. What makes this book particularly fascinating is how it balances unflinching brutality with tender vulnerability, a combination that has attracted praise from unlikely quarters, including renowned psychologist Dr. Esther Perel, who cited it as a provocative exploration of power dynamics in extreme circumstances. As civilization has crumbled in Quinn's fictional universe, so too have conventional relationship structures, leaving readers to wonder, in a world with no rules, what would you sacrifice for safety, connection, and pleasure? For 4 years, Eden lived as a ghost, hidden away in a forest cave with only her vegetable garden and cherished books for company. She had mastered the art of invisibility. The devastating missile attacks known as Day Death had obliterated major cities and infrastructure, followed by drone strikes that targeted heat signatures, effectively ending civilization as she knew it. In this brutal new reality, Eden had created a fragile peace for herself until the day human voices lured her from safety. The sound of conversation after years of silence proved irresistible. Just one look, she promised herself. But upon returning to her cave, she found her garden uprooted, belongings scattered, and two men waiting with predatory intent. One glance at their hungry expressions told her everything she needed to know. So she ran. For days, she fled through dense forest, her pursuers growing in number. With each passing hour, her strength waned, a bleeding arm, an injured foot, and dwindling hope. Just when exhaustion threatened to claim her, she stumbled upon three heavily armed men by a water source. One grinned at her. "Well, hello, sweetheart." These weren't ordinary survivors. Their clean clothes, well-maintained weapons, and healthy appearances set them apart in this ravaged world. The tallest, a commanding presence she would come to know as Dominic, watched her with calculating eyes, while his companions, the charming, dimpled Lucky and the golden-haired, gentle-handed Beau, approached her with varying degrees of caution and interest. When gunfire thundered through the forest, confirming her pursuers were closing in, Eden found herself facing an impossible choice: trust these armed strangers or face the devils she knew were hunting her. Despite Dominic's reluctance to risk his men for a stranger, Beau's insistence that they needed her tipped the scales. Before she could fully process what was happening, she found herself carried up a nearly invisible cliff path to safety, pressed against Beau's solid chest as gunfire erupted below. From her protected position behind rocks, Eden watched in shock as these three men methodically eliminated her pursuers with military precision. When the gunfire finally ceased, the ringing in her ears gave way to a stunning realization. These men had just saved her life, but at what cost would their protection come? "You'll belong to all of us, equally." Beau's words hung in the air as Eden tried to process their meaning. After fleeing her pursuers and being rescued by these three men, she now faced a proposition she never could have imagined. The five men of Bristlebrook, Dominic, Beau, Lucky, Jasper, and Jacob, had been without female companionship for 3 years. Their solution was as pragmatic as it was shocking. Any woman staying with them would be shared. Dom's crude questioning about whether she'd ever been under a man and if she could handle five of them after their 3-year drought should have repulsed her. Instead, the thought of this dark, dangerous man between her thighs sent unexpected heat pooling in her stomach. With only her deceased husband Henry as her sole previous partner, a man who had found her frigid, Eden had never considered herself particularly sexual. Yet something about these men awakened a part of her she hadn't known existed. When Bo pulled her into a scorching kiss by the river after treating her wounds, Eden responded with an intensity that surprised them both. As she ground against his hardness, feeling desire she'd never experienced before, Dom's sharp voice broke them apart. The tension between these men was palpable, but so was their united front regarding their arrangement. "Come with me, darling. You don't belong out here," Bo had urged, his southern accent thick with sincerity. When Eden protested it wasn't just him she'd be agreeing to, he simply asked, "What would it hurt to try?" What indeed? With her cave destroyed and hunters on her trail, Eden made her choice. As they departed, Dom's warning hung heavy in the air. If she can't keep up, she gets left behind. The journey to Bristlebrook would test her endurance, but the real challenge would be navigating the complex dynamics awaiting her there. As Lucky carried her piggyback when her injured foot gave out, they played question games to pass the time. Eden revealed her love for books and libraries, how literature had been her salvation during years of isolation. In turn, she learned these men had been army rangers, not circus performers, as Lucky had jokingly claimed. Their easy camaraderie spoke of deep bonds formed before and strengthened after the world fell apart. Exhausted from their journey and lulled by this unexpected human connection, Eden fell asleep in Lucky's arms, unaware of how completely her life was about to change. Eden woke in a room that defied everything she knew about post-apocalyptic survival. Silky sheets caressed her skin, and sunlight filtered through midnight blue blackout curtains. The spacious bedroom featured barkwood furniture, rich colors, a bookcase filled with volumes, a desk, and even a sitting area with a fireplace. After years in a damp cave, this opulence felt almost sacrilegious. The bathroom proved even more shocking. Heated tiles, a massive shower, and a porcelain tub that promised luxuries she'd forgotten existed. After showering away years of grime, Eden donned a white silk shirt that barely reached mid-thigh, having no clean underwear. Looking in the mirror, she barely recognized herself. Translucent pale skin, sharp cheekbones, and dark, tangled hair. The woman staring back looked haunted, fragile, yet somehow resilient. When she met Jasper Douglas, the fourth man of Bristlebrook, Eden was immediately struck by his elegant authority. In his early 40s, with a sulky, feminine mouth contrasting with masculine strength, Jasper exuded quiet power and intelligence that both unnerved and attracted her. As he escorted her through the massive lodge, she marveled at its construction. Dark wood and stone with Asian influences, built into a cliff and protected by mountains and forest. "The drones couldn't see us," Jasper explained, revealing that the lodge had been his family home, built by his Korean mother and American businessman father. Its strategic position had saved them when the attacks came, making it invisible from above. The men's backgrounds slowly emerged through conversation. They had all been military, Jasper retired, the others on leave when day death occurred. They had attempted to contact international embassies afterward, but received no response, confirming the global scale of devastation. Despite this grim reality, Bristlebrook stood as an improbable paradise in the wasteland, with solar power, clean water, food stores, and security systems that had allowed them to survive in relative comfort while the world burned. Eden's introduction to the fifth man, Jacob, came as a shock. Rough and tattooed, he immediately grabbed and kissed her forcefully. After Jasper and Bo pulled him away, Eden slapped him hard. As Jacob stormed out, claiming she would do her part for all of them if she stayed, Lucky comforted her, insisting Jacob was harmless. Dominic coldly suggested it was a test, questioning her about her attraction to Bo and making it clear that their arrangement was non-negotiable. The stark contrast between Bristlebrook's physical comforts and the emotional complexity of its inhabitants left Eden reeling. She had traded one kind of survival for another, and the rules of this new world were only beginning to unfold.
Beautiful men make your brain fuzzy. Thinking is important. Abort.
Eden's own survival tip echoed mockingly in her mind as Dominic began his inquisition about her sexual history. With only her ex-husband as experience, she reluctantly admitted to a lackluster past. Lucky crudely but accurately summarized her history, embarrassing her further. When Jasper expressed concern about her inexperience, suggesting she wasn't a good fit for their arrangement, something shifted in Eden. Before she could process what was happening, Beau pulled her onto his lap and began touching her intimately, his hand sliding beneath her shirt while asking if she wanted him. Despite her embarrassment at being exposed in front of the others, Eden found herself responding with an intensity that shocked her. When Beau began caressing her exposed body and pinching her nipples, her protests faded into pleasure as she surrendered to sensations she'd never experienced. This moment marked the beginning of Eden's sexual awakening. With each man, she discovered different facets of her desires. Jacob, initially frightening with his rough exterior, revealed unexpected depths during their first night together. When he used his mouth on her while introducing her to anal play, the initial shock quickly gave way to overwhelming pleasure. Their connection turned primal, her nails digging into his skin, his pace relentless, until they reached a shattering climax that left Eden breathless and transformed. With Lucky, intimacy came wrapped in playfulness. Their game of Twister evolved into a dance of questions and truths, each answer earning the right to choose positions. As they twisted together on the mat, Lucky's acrobatic background and natural charm broke through Eden's reservations. Their encounter was filled with laughter and lightness, yet no less passionate for its playfulness. Beau offered tenderness mixed with dominance, his southern charm masking a core of steel. Dom's approach was more challenging. His commanding presence demanded submission even as it provided safety. And Jasper remained tantalizingly out of reach, his sadistic tendencies both frightening and fascinating to Eden. Through these encounters, Eden discovered parts of herself she never knew existed. The woman her husband had called frigid proved capable of passion that surprised even these experienced men. Yet her physical surrender came more easily than emotional vulnerability. As she navigated these complex relationships, Eden struggled to understand where she truly belonged in this unusual arrangement. Was she merely fulfilling a function, or could she find genuine connection within these walls? I'm a person, not a pet. Eden's outburst came after weeks of being kept in the dark about important matters at Bristolbrook. When Dom received an alert that caused the men to exchange concerned looks before retreating to their study, refusing to tell Eden what was happening, something inside her snapped. She shattered a bowl and shouted at Beau, demanding respect and truthfulness, insisting she could contribute more than just sex. This moment crystallized Eden's struggle for equality within Bristolbrook's walls. While she had agreed to their sexual arrangement, she hadn't agreed to be treated as decorative or incapable. Her years of survival alone had honed skills and resilience the men initially overlooked, seeing only her physical vulnerability. The power dynamics extended beyond gender. Among the men themselves, hierarchies existed that affected how they interacted with Eden. Dom clearly led with military precision, his decisions rarely questioned. Jasper provided intellectual and emotional counterbalance with his psychological background. Beau's medical knowledge made him the group's healer, while Lucky's acrobatic skills and optimism lightened tense moments. Jacob, as the mechanic and handyman, often felt marginalized despite his crucial role in maintaining their sanctuary. These dynamics came to a head when Eden discovered the men had been lying about hunters in the woods. After eavesdropping on their meeting and being caught, Dom forced her to kneel, cruelly suggesting she was interchangeable. When Eden defiantly responded with, "Fuck you," the confrontation escalated to a punishment scenario that revealed another crucial oversight. No one had properly explained safe words to her. Lucky's intervention became a turning point. Kneeling beside Eden, he explained that safe words allow her to stop everything if uncomfortable. Eden's misconception that safe words were meaningless, believing she must obey regardless, stunned Lucky. He emphasized there's never a consequence for using a safe word, and that they're equals in consent. When Eden chose Bristolbrook as her safe word, the first place she'd felt safe, she revealed her deeper fear, being bundled up and put on a shelf when they were done with her. This conversation led to a compromise. Lucky agreed to include her in missions and teach her self-defense, recognizing her as a capable partner rather than just a sexual companion. The handshake that sealed this deal represented Eden's first step toward true equality at Bristolbrook, not just in the bedroom, but in all aspects of their survival.
It means this trap wasn't meant for us. It means Bristolbrook is under attack. Dom's grim assessment came after Eden described the leader of the hunters who had been pursuing her. The name, Sam, triggered alarm in both Dom and Beau, revealing a threat far greater than Eden had realized. The hunters weren't just random survivors. They were an organized force with specific targets. The men had been monitoring a larger encampment to the south while four men approached from the north, somehow knowing the camera locations. This suggested a betrayal by former members of their group, possibly Heather and Thomas. Dom's furious reaction to the implication that Heather, his ex, who was a cop and saved his life, would betray them, revealed deeper histories and wounds. These external threats exposed internal conflicts among Bristlebrook's residents. When Dom ordered Beau to accompany him at 4 a.m. to eliminate the northern intruders, tension erupted as Beau hesitated because it was his scheduled night with Eden. Dom's anger and panic surfaced at the thought of Beau choosing a woman over watching his back, revealing insecurities beneath his commanding exterior. Eden's decision to follow Dom and Beau as they tracked the hunters led to further revelations. Their conversation about Heather, who had manipulated relationships with both men, showed how past betrayals shaped current trust issues. When Eden accidentally revealed herself and nearly got shot by Beau, the confrontation forced them to admit they'd been lying about the hunter's connection to Bristlebrook. The situation escalated dramatically when Eden helped eliminate a sniper threatening Dom and Beau. In the process, she was forced to kill for the first time, pushing the shooter from his perch and accidentally stabbing him with her knife as they fell. The blood-covered aftermath left Eden traumatized, confronting the brutal reality of what survival now required. This incident became a turning point in Eden's relationship with Dom and Beau. As they washed the blood from her body in the river, tenderness transformed into a complex scene of punishment, pleasure, and ultimately healing. Between them, Eden confessed her guilt, while they reminded her she acted in self-defense, saving not just herself, but Dom too. Their care washed away more than physical filth. It cleansed the poison of guilt from her soul. In the aftermath, Eden announced she wanted to break their deal. No more conditions for staying at Bristlebrook. She explained she cared about all of them in different ways and was determined they could make it work through communication. This moment of clarity and commitment came just as they discovered the true scale of the threat facing them. Bristlebrook itself was under attack.
The attack on Bristlebrook unfolded with devastating swiftness, transforming their sanctuary into a battleground in mere minutes. Jacob, having barely escaped the burning barn with severe burns along his left side and shoulder, found himself trapped behind the drying shed with only two magazines remaining. The smell of smoke mixed with gunpowder as flames consumed the carefully built greenhouse, 3 years of work reduced to ash. Lucky's heroic sacrifice, throwing his last M67 grenade that eliminated three immediate threats but left him exposed and wounded in the courtyard, changed the battlefield dynamics but couldn't stem the relentless assault. From his elevated position in the dense pine woods, Beau methodically eliminated hunters one by one with his suppressed rifle, each shot weighing heavily on the former combat medic's conscience. His hands, once dedicated to healing, now dealt death with precision. After killing a fourth attacker who revealed their intentions to capture women and families for their compound, Beau formulated a desperate plan. The radio crackled with static as he sent Dom a final coded message, Echo Protocol, before arming himself with Claymore mines and spare magazines to create a diversion that might give the others precious minutes to escape through the emergency tunnel. The chaos of the attack stripped away any pretense, revealing the profound bonds formed at Bristlebrook over the past 18 months. Despite their earlier conflicts, Jacob's distrust of newcomers, Lucky's gambling debts, Dom's leadership struggles, each man instinctively moved to protect the others and their home. Their military training provided tactical advantages in small unit combat, but they faced overwhelming odds against an enemy who had clearly studied their defense patterns and knew about their hidden caches. As bullets impacted the reinforced walls and buildings burned, Eden's transformation from solitary survivor to vital community member reached its defining moment. The woman who had spent 3 years hiding in a mountain cave now coordinated their defense from the radio room, her intimate knowledge of the surrounding terrain proving invaluable. Her survival instincts complemented their combat training. She knew exactly where to direct Bo's fire based on animal movement patterns she'd observed over months. The cliffhanger ending leaves readers grappling with multiple uncertainties. Who among the defenders will survive the night? What terrible cost their protection of each other might exact? And whether the deep bonds forged in this apocalyptic landscape can endure such devastating losses? As Jasper had philosophically explained to Eden months earlier about his failed pre-apocalypse marriage, when you discover your fatal weakness, either protect it at all costs or destroy it before it destroys you. For the embattled residents of Bristlebrook, that fatal weakness might be the very connections they formed with each other, the relationships that make survival meaningful but also make them vulnerable. The approaching dawn would reveal whether their chosen family would prove to be their salvation or their downfall. If you can protect your family, you've done the best anyone could hope for in this life. This survival tip, offered during Bristlebrook's darkest hour, encapsulates the book's central theme. Beyond the steamy encounters and power dynamics lies a story about finding family in the aftermath of catastrophe. Each character brings their own wounds and strengths to this makeshift home, creating something that transcends mere survival. Eden's journey from isolated widow to the emotional center of Bristlebrook mirrors the larger transformation of these six individuals into a cohesive unit. Her initial agreement to be shared sexually evolves into something far more complex, a network of relationships where each connection has its own unique character and value. With Lucky, she finds laughter. With Bo, tenderness. With Jacob, unexpected depth. With Dom, protection, and with Jasper, intellectual challenge. The men's relationships with each other prove equally complex. Jasper and Lucky's unresolved romantic history adds layers to the group dynamic, while Dom and Bo's shared past with Heather creates lingering trust issues. Jacob's feelings of being an outsider despite years together highlight how, even in this intimate setting, belonging remains complicated. What begins as a pragmatic arrangement for sexual release transforms into something far more meaningful, a family forged in apocalyptic fire. The external threats force them to recognize what they've built together is worth protecting, not just for survival, but for the quality of life it provides. In a world where cities lie in ruins and civilization has collapsed, they've created something precious, a place where connection still matters. The book's final scenes, with Bristlebrook under attack and each character making desperate choices to protect the others, demonstrate how far they've come from their initial bargain. Eden is no longer just a woman they share, but someone they would die to protect, not because of obligation, but because of genuine attachment. Similarly, she fights not just for her own survival, but for theirs, having found in these five complicated men something she never expected, a home. As readers reach the cliffhanger ending, the question isn't just who will survive physically, but what will remain of the emotional sanctuary they've built together. In a world where everything has been stripped away, they've discovered that connection, however unconventional, might be the most valuable resource of all.